CBS News. The Democrats continue campaigning for presidential primaries. I'm Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Alabama Governor George Wallace drew a big audience tonight in a Florida town. David Dick has a report.
George Wallace has drawn two consecutive huge crowds in Florida following a comparatively poor turnout when he officially opened his campaign for the March 9th Florida Democratic primary. Saturday night, it was Plant City near Tampa, where there was a turnaway crowd with 3,000 or more who managed to squeeze inside a high school gymnasium. Wallace again warned that the Democratic Party should not repeat the mistakes of 1972.
I have offered myself again because my health is good and because I want the Democratic Party to be able to vote for somebody in 1976 instead of against somebody like they did in 1972.
Wallace campaigns Monday in Massachusetts. David Dick, CBS News, Montgomery.
Wallace returned to Alabama after his Florida appearance. Earlier, he predicted that he would win the Mississippi Democratic Precinct Caucus that was held on Saturday. About 40% of the county convention delegates have been chosen, and Wallace has 42% of them. About 26% of the delegates so far are uncommitted, and 16 are pledged so far to former Georgia Governor Jimmy Carter. Carter, who won last week's Iowa Democratic Precinct Caucus, said that caucus voting has shown Wallace to be stronger this year than some people had expected. Carter is in Vermont campaigning for that state's March primary, telling a group of Democrats in Brattleboro that the government should discourage abortions through education and make contraceptives available to people who want them. Carter says he also supports better adoption methods. More news coming up.
Does competition in college always lead to cheating? Well, some students and faculty members think so. I'm Lawrence Johnson for What's New in Learning, heard every Sunday on the CBS Radio Network. And the problem of students cribbing on exams seems to be on the increase from coast to coast. And tomorrow I'll tell you about some plans that top colleges and universities have to make sure cheating is kept to a minimum. Listen as we discuss cribbing on the college campus on What's New in Learning, tomorrow over the CBS Radio Network.
I'm Janet Lee. I do volunteer work on behalf of mentally retarded children and adults, and I've learned that many people confuse mental retardation with mental illness. Mentally retarded people are not mentally ill, not mentally disturbed at all. They just learn more slowly than most of us do. It gives me great personal satisfaction when I'm able to help a mentally retarded person take even one small step on the road to independence. Won't you help, too, by supporting your local association of the National Association for Retarded Citizens?
Ralph Nader says the country's 700 biggest companies should be chartered by the federal government because most state charters do not exercise enough control over powerful corporations. Nader says that state regulation is so bad that a corporate crime wave has evolved with bribes, payoffs, and price fixing between the companies and the government. Under Nader's federal chartering proposal, the companies would have to make public details about the money they give to politicians and to foreign political parties. The Canadian government has released some new unemployment figures that are especially grim to young people. Randy McDonald of station CKEY has the story.
According to Statistics Canada, the country's fact-finding agency, the unemployment rate for young Canadians has now more than doubled the nation's overall jobless rate. Last month, almost one-half of Canada's 700,000 unemployed workers were under the age of 24. That's the highest unemployment figure for young people the government has encountered since it began monitoring the nation's workforce 23 years ago. The inflationary state of the Canadian economy is cited as the main factor for the unhealthy unemployment situation. Employers are being more cautious in the number of young people they hire as the federal government presses on with its wage and price control program announced 3 months ago. Randy MacDonald for CBS News, Toronto.
And now, this message.
You're listening to the beginning of something. An automobile commercial? No. As a matter of fact, it's the beginning of a new phase in a man's life. A man who looks different, moves differently, speaks differently, because he was born with cerebral palsy. The new phase in his life began when he started the engine of that car and drove off with his brand new operator's license in his pocket. His name is Joe Elko, man with cerebral palsy, college student, and now automobile driver. It upset some people to see Joe get into that car. In fact, it upset some people to see him at all. That's because they don't understand that although Joe may look different, Inside, he's no different than anyone else. He and United Cerebral Palsy are looking forward to the day when everyone will understand. In the meantime, Joe joins us in hoping you'll give generously to United Cerebral Palsy. They had a hand in helping him become what he is today, a man with a future.
Israeli Prime Minister Rabin arrives in the United States Monday for an official two-week visit. On Saturday, he said the formula of a step-by-step approach to a Middle East peace has apparently run its course, and it's now time to reconvene the Geneva Peace Conference. Lebanon's Muslim leader Rashid Karami has agreed to stay on as prime minister as fighting tapered off Saturday under a Syrian-sponsored ceasefire. Karami called on his countrymen to forget all our pain and suffering, the tragedy of the past, and to look to the future to build a new Lebanon. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
KIX High Weather. Partly cloudy throughout the weekend, a slight chance of a few showers. Patchy night and morning fog or low clouds. Highs in the mid-40s, overnight lows in the lower 30s. Chance of precipitation, 10% throughout the weekend.
Radio Mystery Theater presents Come In. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. It's been said that you can always recognize a werewolf simply by shaking hands. If the handshaker has hair on the inside of his palms, QED, a werewolf. Of course, this is an old wives' tale. As for me, I'm perfectly willing to accept the fact that the whole idea of werewolves was absurdly exaggerated by the superstitious during the Middle Ages. However, I would like some explanation of the concept everyone recognizes today, of the subconscious, something inside a person which can take over and utterly control a person's mind and actions, particularly under great stress.
It's a wolf! I'll kill it!
Don't shoot, man! Don't shoot! Or be prepared to spend the rest of your life on your knees praying for the Lord's forgiveness.
Our mystery drama, Night of the Howling Dog, was especially adapted from the classic by Algernon Blackwood for the Mystery Theater by Murray Burnett, and stars Mason Adams and Norman Rose. It is sponsored in part by Time Magazine and Allstate Insurance Companies. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Magazine, sir?
Yes. Time Magazine, please, stewardess.
Oh, golly, that man across the aisle just took the last copy of Time we have. Oh. Sorry. Magazine?
Pardon me?
Yes?
I noticed you haven't started reading your Time Magazine yet.
No, you couldn't.
But you haven't.
I'm writing a letter to my mother, and when I'm finished, I'm going to enjoy Time. Don't try to peek inside of it, sir.
Stewardess.
Yes, sir.
This man isn't reading the Time magazine you gave.
I'm writing a letter first.
To his mommy.
Don't be nasty.
All I want.
Sir, couldn't this gentleman
just
here...
Just let me glance at the theater section.
No.
Modern Living?
No.
One little book review.
Look, I know how enjoyable Time magazine is to read. He'll start reading one article and another, and by the time he's finished, we'll be in Budapest.
I have a speed reading diploma.
The
problem here, stewardess.
Not really, Captain. This man here has the last copy of Time magazine, but he's writing a letter to his mommy.
Sir, you'll have to give up one or the other.
Yes. All right. Here.
Dear mommy, I'm up in a big airplane.
Time makes everything more interesting, including you. To
dreams. We all seek to understand the many ways in which God reveals his word. The prophet Joel spoke in the name of God. It shall come to pass in the last days, I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. So pay attention to your visions and dreams. They may contain more than you imagine. For your free booklet on dreams, write to the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. That's the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021.
Pages of fiction are filled with surrogates passionately pleading the causes of other lovers to beautiful ladies. The characters of Cyrano de Bergerac, John Alden courting Patricia for Miles Standish, and the devil himself serenading the beautiful Margarita on behalf of Faust. These are only a few examples that come immediately to mind. However, I had never heard of a lover deputizing an animal to forward his suit until now. And to bring you this amazing story, I introduce an eyewitness.
It's strange that as I approach the end of my years, I now find more people willing to believe the stories of my adventures with my employer, the famed psychologist of the occult, Duane Carter. When I was working so closely with Duane and writing down these excursions into the dark recesses of men's soul and minds, I found nothing but skeptics. Today, perhaps since we know more, we now realize there are still things we don't know. At any rate, let me start at the beginning of this incredible phenomenon. It all began when Duane and I said goodbye at London's Waterloo Station on a hot July day in 1912.
Now, Ernie, we've got a full fall schedule, so you be sure and get plenty of rest. I want you to be raring to go when we meet in Stockholm on August 15th. Unless, of course, you should send for me sooner.
Send for you? If I'm going to need you, Duane, then I'm hardly going to have a restful vacation.
Nonsense. Both of us know the strange effects a stay in the wilderness can have on people who wear the trappings of civilization the rest of the year.
Well, you were the one who prescribed getting back to nature as the prescription that straightened out Timothy Manning's life. If he hadn't come to consult you, he'd still be preaching in a pulpit, making his wife and daughter's lives miserable.
But Timmy isn't the only member of your little party.
Are you trying to sound a warning? If so, you'll have to be more specific.
Well, I have nothing specific in mind. Just a feeling that will very probably turn out to be wrong. You go ahead and enjoy yourself, Ernie, and forget what I said.
Duane must have known the one thing I could not do was forget what he said. Duane Carter's whole reputation as a scientist was based on his uncanny sixth sense, an intuition that enabled him to handle cases too bizarre for other psychiatrists. So I was more than ordinarily alert as our boat approached the shore of the small island we'd chosen for our cave.
Easy there, Ernie. Peter, lend Ernie a hand and we'll pull the cutter further up the beach. Then unload, and the ladies will see to the tents and other supplies. Ah, this is the life. Room for body and mind. Just the place for a man to refuel his soul.
And how does a man go about doing that, Reverend?
I'll let Peter Sangre answer that. Peter, here's a perfect opportunity for you to show Ernie how much you've learned since you started studying with me.
There'll be time enough for theology lessons later, Dad. Right now, Peter could be very useful in giving Mother and me a hand with some of these supplies.
Oh, I'll be happy to, any time at all. I'm always very happy to help you, Miss Manning.
Peter Sangre was a young Canadian studying for the ministry under the Reverend Manning's tutelage. He'd been staying with the family back in New York, and it was obvious that he'd been smitten by the laughing eyes of Joan Manny. So obvious that it was sometimes embarrassing to watch the depth of yearning in his eyes. This was painfully evident the first night when Peter, Joan, and I joined forces exploring our island. Well, I never realized the Baltic Sea had this many small islands so close to shore.
It's so beautiful. The water's so calm. I wish we had the canoe. We could paddle to the other islands while we still have the northern light.
Good idea. You and Peter wait here, and I'll go across and fetch.
No! Let Peter get the canoe. You and I will wait here.
You bet. I'll be back as soon as I can.
Well, Joni, what was that all about?
You found me rude.
Well, let's say very definite about not wanting to be alone with Peter.
Oh, dear. It was very obvious then. I'm sure he noticed.
I wouldn't worry about him, Joan. Surely you know he's madly in love with you, and you shouldn't feel upset if you don't like him.
I don't dislike him. It's just that I see his eyes on me, seeking, even demanding, and I'm afraid he might do or say something that would lead to unpleasantness.
You, Joan Manning, the fearless, frightened?
Listen, I'm serious. There's something about Peter that makes me feel creepy. Something I don't think he knows himself. I'll confess it draws me, attracts me, but at the same time, it makes me afraid.
Joan, I don't know whether you're trying to tell me you're afraid of Sangree or something in you.
My heart tells me there's something in Peter Sangree. Something buried deep inside him. Something dark and perhaps even dangerous. And I'm desperately afraid and desperately curious.
How long has Peter been studying for the ministry with your dad?
Almost a year.
And this is the first time that you've had this feeling about him?
Yes. It only happened since we came here, away from New York and civilization. It seems almost what he's been waiting for. What we've both been waiting for.
Business of setting up camp for the first few days relegated that strange conversation to the back of my mind. But the Reverend Timmy brought it back sharply with a strange prayer one night.
We give thanks to you, O Lord, for our safe arrival. We also give thanks for our excellent health and pray this may continue for all of us. And the weather be fair, the fish be plentiful, and that nothing from the kingdom of darkness nor any evil thing disturb our nighttime tranquility.
But, Daddy, what brought that on?
Just a thought, Joan. It came into my mind, and I let the Lord know of it.
Reverend, I don't think we should put thoughts like that in the Lord's mind.
I think I can explain, Mr. Simpson.
Were you, Peter?
Yes, sir. You see, I don't know if any of the others felt it, but I know that I sense something, some presence here on the island with us.
But that's impossible. Our exploration showed there were two things lacking on our little island, fresh water and animals.
I didn't say anything about an animal, Joan. I said a presence.
Now, come, children. Perhaps my prayer was out of place. Let's all be off to our tents and a good night's rest.
Let's not play tricks. I know someone's trying to frighten me. I'm coming out and see whoever it is that's playing this childish game.
Joan, I'm really sorry about that prayer last night. It obviously upset you and made you dream about some animal or other growling around your tent.
I tell you, I distinctly heard the howling of a dog. Didn't anyone else hear it?
Well, of course not. No one else heard it because you dreamed it.
Because of the lack of water, there's not an animal of any size on the whole island. You know we have to fetch our water from that little island across the way.
I know what I heard. And it wasn't a dream.
Well, there's nothing to prevent some animal from swimming over. A deer, for instance, might easily land in the night and decide to take a look around.
Well, look, Mr. Simpson, I'd like you and the other men to come along with me. Mother, you stay here. You've already seen the tracks. And I want Daddy to apologize to me and admit that I'm not having bad dreams. All right, now. There, look. Look at those marks on the outside of the tent. Are you going to tell me that they're not animal tracks?
Certainly they are. These tracks appear to have been made by some type of fairly large animal.
I apologize. I'm sorry I doubted you, darling.
Oh, Daddy, I'm so frightened. I'm just plain scared.
Mr. Simpson, look here. Look at these marks. A brute must have been scratching around my tent, too.
Certainly looks that way. These are the same marks. Did you hear anything?
Not me. Since I've come here, I sleep like a log.
Reverend, would you come over here to Peter's tent for a minute?
Coming, Simpson.
It's really strange. I wonder if Mrs. Manning heard anything. After all, her tent is right next to Jones. Timmy, what do you make of those tracks?
Looks like an animal, right enough. Tell you what I'd appreciate, Simpson, if you don't mind.
Well, I'm here to help.
Why don't you take Joan out for the day? On a hike or in the canoe and see if you can calm her down.
I thank you for taking me on this canoe trip today. But I know Dad suggested it.
That's right.
But I thank you anyway. It's kind of you.
Have you noticed any change in our friend Peter Sangree?
You mean his attitude towards me?
Good Lord, no. If anything, his devotion has become even more obvious.
Well, what do you mean, changed?
Well, he seems much more self-reliant. Almost as if I don't know how to put it, but almost as if this is where he belongs.
So you sense something strange about him, too?
No. Not strange. It's just that he seems to fit in better here than when I first met him. He's more confident. He's surer of himself.
Yes, I felt that. And the more confident he gets, the more frightened I get.
For the next few days and nights, there was no excitement. And our camp life seemed to have settled into a routine. Until one night, the quiet was shattered by screams coming from...
Gurney! Hang on, Gurney, we're coming! Joan! Are you all right?
Something touched me! Something touched me! I felt it through the tent!
What you saying, Ernest?
Daddy, Daddy! The same growling and scratching as before. And there was a great tearing blow and...
No doubt about that, Reverend. You can see the gap where the thing or whatever it is ripped right through.
The dog again. We must do something.
The first thing to do is to get over to the stockade and get a fire going.
What's going on? I brought my rifle. If it's that animal again, let me have it.
Come on, Peter. Help me start a fire.
What in the world do you think it is, Mr. Simpson? It surely can't be a dog.
It can't be very far away. We'll organize a hunt at once, this very minute.
Now, slow down, Reverend.
Action, Ernie. Any action to stop panic.
We've gone over every inch of this island, and there's no living creature on it besides ourselves.
Peter's right, Reverend. Not even a squirrel could have gotten by us.
All right. I know what it was. A dog from one of the farms on the larger island. A dog that's turned wild. It was attracted by our fires and the smell of food, and now it's gone back to where it came from. That's what it was.
Oh, Daddy, you don't really believe what you just said? You can't believe that. You just can't.
Occultists insist that events have souls. Souls given to them by the emotion and thoughts of those concerned with them. This in itself is a terrifying concept, because I can think of the souls of some events that must have shriveled with terror and agony that's indescribable. I'll be back with Act Two and the very strange events on the Baltic Island in a moment.
Isn't it nice to know you're free? To see the things you want to see. touch the heights you dare to reach, to know you're all that you can be.
According to EPA results, a 1976 Buick Electra, equipped with automatic transmission and available 350 V8, delivered 14 miles per gallon in the city test and 18 in the highway test. Of course, these are only estimates. The mileage you get may vary. But what it all boils down to is this. Now, Electra isn't just a luxury car. It's a practical luxury car. In California, see your Buick dealer for EPA figures.
The time, August 15th, 1944. Keeping pressure on the forces of Germany, the Allies decide to make a massive landing on the southern coast of France. Hundreds of Allied ships wait quietly for the signal to launch. This is James Drury with Navy Chronicle. Allied chiefs of staff meet. Plans are made. Efforts are coordinated. The attack will close the gap between campaigns in Italy and Normandy. After 4 months of preliminary bombing, ending in a massive airstrike by our 1,400 planes, nearly 900 United States and British ships put thousands of troops ashore. A force of 9 escort aircraft carriers provide air cover and close air support for the assault. Allied warships destroy opposing enemy shore guns. The invasion is a speedy success. And the United States Navy was there.
You've been listening to Navy Chronicle, an historical series with James Drury and the U.S. Navy Band.
Issues of life and vacations in the untrammeled wilderness have long been extolled in song and story. We've all longed for the starry nights with the wind sighing softly through the friendly branches of the protecting trees. But nature also has a savage side, and sometimes a trip to the wilderness can bring out whatever primitive savage lurks within us.
I hate the rain, especially when I'm in the woods.
I thought you could use today to catch up on your studying, Peter.
Reverend says I'll pass my exams with flying colors and become a full-fledged minister in the fall.
Well, Timmy should know.
He should know more about his own daughter, too.
What does that mean?
Oh, nothing. I guess we're all upset by what's happened with Joan.
Well, of course we are, but I don't understand what you meant about Joan's father.
Forget it. I'm sorry I said it. I just wish one of us would be able to track down that dog, or whatever it is, that's gotten Joan in such a state.
She should be all right with her mother. You know that she's moved into Mrs. Manning's tent now, and there should be no more nonsense.
Nonsense? Is that what you think is so frightening for Joan? Maybe you should join forces with her father.
I had no trouble going to sleep after my rather strange conversation with young Sangree, but suddenly I found myself wide awake. I jumped from dead sleep to absolute wakefulness in a single instant. The rain had stopped. I went outside and sniffed the delicious clean air. A pallid half moon just sinking into the sea threw a spectral light between the trees. And then just 20 feet away across the paths, I saw a head thrust round the edge of Peter Sangree's tent. The head of an animal. An animal that had the appearance of no animal I'd ever seen before. Terror struck me. I knew it was the animal. And as I watched, riveted to the spot, the thing turned, slipped between the trees, and vanished. Wake up, Peter! Wake up! Peter, come on.
What is it?
Peter, come on. The beast. The beast has been here in your tent. I swear it was about to leap at your throat.
What are you saying?
Let's not waste time. Quick, get your gun before Joan is attacked.
Joan? Oh, yes. All right. Yes, let's get over there.
I'm with you.
Yes. I see the tracks.
It's a wolf.
That's what it is. A wolf lost among the islands and starving to death. Desperate.
I don't think so. It was unlike any animal I've ever seen.
Whatever it is, it must be killed. Joan must be protected. I'll sleep all day and sit up all night and shoot the beast the minute I see it.
No, I don't think this is anything that we can deal with. I have a better plan. I'm going to send for the one man I know who can help. Dwayne Carter. He will know what to do.
Wayne Carter, the psychic doctor.
Yes.
Then you think, what, that something of that sort?
I am certain of it.
Although nothing Duane Carter ever did took me completely by surprise, I was astonished to find a letter care of General Delivery in the Waxholm post office. It was from Carter, giving a Stockholm address and stating that a phone call would bring him to Waxholm that same day. And so that night, Duane Carter joined us on the island. And after dinner, with Peter also sitting in, I told him of the strange events.
You did well to send for me, Ernie. What we have to deal with here is a werewolf.
A werewolf? Oh, surely these things are...
Rare enough, I'm happy to say, Mr. Sangree. Now, you say that no one has been injured so far.
No, surely there can't be any question of this poor, starved beast injuring anybody, can there?
I hope not. But what makes you think the creature is starved?
What? I can't tell you. Except that I felt from the beginning it was in pain and starved. Although why I feel this never occurred to me until you asked.
You really know very little about it, then.
I really know nothing at all. Nothing.
Help! Help! Get it off me! Keep it away! Oh, please, please!
There it is! Let me take a shot at it!
No, no! Oh, don't shoot, Rep. Help your wife take care of your daughter, and then meet Ernie and me at the stockade. How is Joan?
Oh, the beast tore her arm. Thank the Lord my wife woke up and the thing ran off. But it's not serious.
Well, that's something to be thankful for. Here, here's your coffee.
Thanks. This will be our last breakfast on this cursed island. We'll strike camp and get away today.
I think, Reverend, for the safety of all concerned, it would be better not to leave the island just now.
Both Mrs. Manning and I are grateful for your presence, Dr. Carter. But I can't help thinking that perhaps all of our problems would have been solved if you hadn't stopped me when I had the brute in my gun sights.
Had you fired and had you killed the thing, you would have committed murder.
Murder? Well, now you've got me completely confounded. How can killing this thing possibly be murder?
Well, this thing, as you refer to it, Reverend, is a man. One of this camping party. A man gone savage.
Well, I saw the thing. That was no man. That was a dog or a wolf.
Of course. You see, this is a case of modern lycanthropy.
Lycanthropy? Werewolves? Those superstitions of the Middle Ages can have no actual significance today.
We are face to face with a modern example of what I believe has always been a profound fact.
Fact? Oh, come now, Dr. Carter.
You have heard of the astral body, or as I prefer to describe it, the fluidic body. It has the power, under certain conditions, of projecting itself and becoming visible to others.
Well, aren't you talking about two different things altogether, Doctor? An astral body is something people can accept because it's a human form, not an animal.
Yes, that's true. But the fluidic body can assume forms other than human. And such forms will be determined by the dominating thought and wish of the owner.
You've lost me.
You've never really understood the effect of this primitive camping life upon all the members of your party. Old, old instincts, deeply buried in the subconscious, instincts no one ever dreamed they had, suddenly come forth in a primitive setting.
Well, I'm honestly trying to follow you, Doctor, but ancient instincts and atavism are terms which hardly explain a roaming animal with teeth, claws, and a thirst for blood.
That last is your term, not mine. But it's a very exact one. I would say that what we have here is an animal that's impelled to bathe in the very heart's blood of the one it desires.
And if I didn't know your reputation, I'd say you have a very strange way of reassuring people.
Fear is rooted in ignorance. Reverend, let's suppose that an extremely sensitive young man has fallen very deeply in love with your daughter. Back in New York, this moonstruck young fellow isn't taken very seriously by Joan, and he knows it. Nevertheless, he loves, and he knows that, too.
Well, does he know what you're trying to tell me?
If you're asking if he's conscious of the change that comes over him, no.
Oh, but I still refuse.
Reverend, surely you don't question the violence that's in all mankind. It lurks underneath the surface. And here, on this island, where we shed the trappings of civilization, he feels strong and free. And the feelings of love he's been suppressing back in New York batter at his consciousness, determined to force their way to the surface. And at night, when he sleeps and his mind is relaxed, he dreams.
The beast that ripped Joan's arm was no dream.
Granted. But this wild force within him becomes fierce and savage when he sleeps. And his frustration turns into half devotion, half beast. And that is the form that his astral body might well assume.
Well, if I grant these wild assumptions, why should I feel easier in my mind?
But if you realize that this transformation isn't deliberate, then you can also understand that, well, that it is not necessarily evil.
You say that to me after seeing Joan's arm?
I tell you that this werewolf is no more than the passionate and fierce instincts of a man, frustrated by day, looking by night for his mate.
That night, we built the largest campfire we'd ever had, and all of us retired early. However, Reverend Timothy, Duane, and I had agreed to meet in Duane's tent.
I'm going to open the tent flap now. Keep your voices down and strike no matches. Reverend, is the camp asleep?
Well, Peter is. I can't answer for the women. I think they're sitting up.
That may be for the best.
Could you fill me in on what we're supposed to be watching for? Is it an animal?
Report the least sound to me. And do nothing on your own. Nothing. You understand?
Right. All right. Shh. Something out there?
I'm not sure. Now, listen, you stay here. I'll let you know.
Timmy and I sat alone for a few minutes, but the good Reverend was restless.
I don't much care for this waiting game with you and Carter, but he wouldn't hear of me staying with my family. He said it might prevent something happening.
He knows. You must trust him.
Well, it's either this astral body, or double business, as he calls it, or else it's possession, as described in the Bible. But I'm sure of one thing. Whatever it is, it's bad. And I brought my rifle.
You brought your rifle, but Duane said...
And my Bible.
Well, one is useless in this situation, and the other is dangerous. The only way we can win in this game is to do what Duane tells us. That's the safest way, believe me.
I'm warning you, Ernie. If anything happens to Joan tonight, I'll shoot first and pray afterwards. Now, what the devil is Carter up to? Sneaking around Peter's tent and making gestures. He looks weird, disappearing in and out of the fog. I think
I'll... Just wait, as he told us. Remember, he has the knowledge that we both lack.
Well... He seems to be coming back now.
Yes.
He's heading this way.
Peter. Peter is in a very deep sleep. His condition is almost cataleptic.
Which means, Doctor?
The fluidic body may be released at any moment. Now, I've taken steps to imprison it in the tent. It can't get out until I permit it. Be alert for any signs of movement now.
I'd better hold on to my rifle.
Reverend, I told you there is to be no shooting. Unless you want a murder. Anything done to the double acts by repercussion on the physical body of the man himself. Now, you better take the cartridges out of that rifle now.
All right, Doctor. But I hope and pray you know what you're doing.
It was with poor grace that Timmy slipped the cartridges out of his rifle, and that all three of us sat and waited for whatever was to come. It seemed hours, but in reality, it was only a few minutes before we heard it.
That's Peter's tent shaking like that, Doctor. It's trying to get out. I hear it.
All right, Reverend. Quickly, the women's tent.
All right. I'll take my rifle just in case. I can always use it as a club.
I urge you, Reverend, to be careful what you do. Because I told you this case is complicated. And it's my belief that your daughter and Peter are made for each other. And I think she knows it every bit as much as he does.
Thank you.
men in love have been known to do foolish things. An English monarch gave up a throne for love. And we've heard of men who turned themselves inside out just to please their beloved. But for me, at any rate, this is the first time I've heard of a lover turning himself into a werewolf. I'll be back with Act 3 in just a moment.
Allstate asks, do you own a small business? Go over these questions with your present group health and life insurance agent. If your agent doesn't say yes to everyone, then...
talk to the good hands people.
First question. Does your present basic medical expense insurance pay the very first dollar? Or that means you pay no deductible. For expenses such as surgery, room and board, x-ray and lab, and in-hospital doctor fees? If not...
talk to the good hands people.
Does your present plan provide coverage for maternity expenses? If not...
talk to the good hands people. You're in good hands with Allstate.
See your Allstate agent to find out what an Allstate plan costs, what is and isn't covered, including benefit reductions and terms under which insurance continues in force. Allstate Insurance Companies, available in most states to businesses that qualify.
I'm Joe Dowd. I'm not an actor, I'm a father. So forgive me if I'm not good at this, but there's something I'd like to ask you. If you can understand what it's like for a kid to hear he has hemophilia, the bleeder's disease, and there's no cure for it, well, then think what it's like to hear there's a medicine that can stop your bleeding, but you can't afford it. It must be like torture. The medicine is called a clotting factor, but it costs about $26,000 every year. So most hemophilia kids can't afford the medicine they need. That's the problem my son Tim has. And my son Joey, too. Hemophilia needs your help. A few dollars to do research that will bring down the cost of the medicine so kids like mine can afford the help their fathers can't give them. Please, help hemophilia. Because what good is the medicine if you can't afford it?
National Hemophilia Foundation, Box 675, New York.
Statistically, there are more people who claim to have sighted UFOs than there are those who claim to have seen ghosts. But the lowest of all in number are those who claim to have experienced the numbing terror of having come face to face with a werewolf. Come along with me now as we share that experience with one of the few who have seen and dealt with that dread creature.
From where Duane and I stood, it was less than 20 feet to Peter Sangree's tent. And although the wind had freshened considerably, it wasn't the wind that was making the canvas of his tent swell and shake. That shaking was caused by something inside the tent trying to get out. The hair on the nape of my neck rose. As we approached the tent, Duane held up his hand.
Ernie, I want you to see it before I release it, so that if anything untoward should happen, you may be able to deal with it without me.
But, Duane, you reassured the Reverend. You said that if...
Ernie, you know that we're dealing with tremendous forces that are still only partially understood.
What do you want me to do?
Well, as we approach the tent, I want you to kneel down and tell me what you see when I hold the flap back.
All right. There's something in there, all right.
But you must be able to see it and describe it before I'll chance releasing it.
As my eyes became accustomed to the dim interior of the tent, I could make out Sangree's form lying under the blankets, while over him and around him flew a dark mass. All I could make out was a pointed muzzle and sharp ears plainly visible against the sides of the tent, and I also caught an occasional gleam of fiery eyes and white fangs.
There's nothing to fear. I told you that before.
How are you holding that thing there?
There are some things I don't think you should know, Ernie. But I'll only tell you that it has to do with electrical impulses from the mind. You see, we all emanate a certain amount of electricity. And, well, just think of it as brain waves. Now step back a little now, because I'm going to release it.
What'll it do?
Hopefully it will listen to me
and I will be able to guide it.
And if it doesn't?
We'll cross that bridge if and when we come to it. Now step back. Keep your eyes fixed on the tent flap. Ernie, watch closely. And then I saw it. An animal. Neck and muzzle thrust forward. An animal about the size of a calf, leaner than a mastiff. And yet, Peter was easily recognizable. It was the head of an animal. But the face, it was Peter Sangree.
Sangree, it is werewolf double.
What do we do now?
Well, I'll try to speak with him. Sangree, Peter Sangree, do you recognize me? Do you realize what it is that you really desire when you assume this form? Sangree, you must listen to me.
Good Lord, Duane, can that be?
Of course. A mating call. You shouldn't be surprised. It is probably Joan. You must remember she practically told you that she was afraid of something deep down in her.
But she's not...
The only salvation for both Joan and Peter is for me to lead Sangree's double to the object for which it yearns. Listen, that's coming from across the lagoon.
Duane, Peter's double, a werewolf. He's gone.
Although my eyes had been fixed upon the animal in front of the tent, somehow it disappeared. One moment it was there, muzzle lifted, sniffing the wind, and then it was gone like a thing of the wind and a trick of vision.
Quickly, Ernie, start following through the trees.
Where will you be?
I must check out Peter's tent.
Why? What for?
To make sure that his werewolf double cannot return until I permit it. I'll join you in a few moments.
Circling Peter's tent, Duane caught up to me and we ran at full speed through the woods, always guided by the now fairly loud howling. And then suddenly the trees fell away and we were on the edge of the lagoon, and there, sharply defined against sea and sky, Joan!
Ernie, stand still and remain quiet.
But there's something wrong with her. She looks half asleep.
She is fully asleep, and we must not wake her.
What are you saying?
She's sleepwalking. If we wake her, the shock might injure her permanently.
But the werewolf, what will...
She's on her way to meet him. You see, she's been irresistibly drawn to him from the beginning.
Well, then how do you explain the torn tent the other night and the wounds on her arm? Wasn't she asleep then?
Not deeply enough. She awoke and was terrified instead of pleased. Now, however, she's in a deep enough sleep to throw off the conventional shackles of civilization that have bound her and admit this man is her mate.
Then she really loves Peter?
Yes, profoundly.
The canoe just coming around the point. Isn't that Reverend Timothy?
Yes, it is.
What's he doing here?
Probably following Joan. At least he had the sense to take the canoe and not wake her.
But what will he do when he...
Ernie, you're right. We're going to have to warn him.
It's too late. There goes Peter's double.
Quick, get to Joan. The Reverend's got a gun.
But you made him unload it.
He's got hold of a pistol.
Stand aside, Joan. Out of my line of fire.
Put that gun down, you fool. Put it...
Oh, idiot. Ernie, get to Joan. Help her.
What are all of you doing here? Where's Peter? Where is he?
Oh, thank the Lord. Joanie, you're all right.
Where'd Peter go? He disappeared so suddenly. He cried out that he was hurt.
We hope that he wasn't hurt seriously.
I hope the brute's dead.
Don't ever say that, Reverend. Unless you want murder on your soul.
Murder? Why do you use that word? If anyone's done anything to him, then he's done it to me, too. Because Peter is...
I know, my dear. He's your love. And I think we can bring him to you, or perhaps you to him. But we must go to your tent and wait for me. Now, Ernie, take care of her until I get back. Reverend, you'd better come with me.
While Duane and the Reverend went off together, I helped Joan back to her tent.
You must let me go to him, Mr. Simpson. I know he needs
you
me.
You heard Duane. He said we should wait for him.
I didn't know until tonight...
That you loved Peter.
Yes.
Duane knew that days ago. That's why we were there watching tonight and hoping that everything would go as we thought. And I think it would have, but for...
Go on. But for what?
But for an unfortunate happening.
It was my father, wasn't it?
Now, Joan, I think you should stay calm.
It was Dad. He did something that... Something that hurt Peter. Hurt him badly. And now he's lost, and so am I.
You mustn't despair. Everything will be different when Duane gets here.
Oh, where is he?
I think he's with your father, and I believe that they're both looking for Peter.
Well, we should be helping him.
Sometimes,
please.
Joan, we help best by doing nothing.
Oh.
Trust me, Joan. Trust Duane. I'm sure that he'll be able to handle this.
Pray that we're in time to help Peter's double return to Peter's physical body.
Will that help, Joan?
I think so.
Now hold it. Now what?
He hasn't been back to the tent. Excuse me just a moment.
What are you doing?
Arranging it so that if Peter's double does make it back here, he can get into the tent and back into Peter's body.
More of your mumbo-jumbo.
I'm trying to save a life you almost snuffed out.
I saved my daughter's life.
Her life was never in danger.
I saw that beast throw itself at my Joan. I hadn't fired when I did.
You would have seen a miracle. A transformation in that beast and in your daughter.
Dr. Carter, I know your reputation.
Reverend,
but
I think we should stop quarreling. Both of us want the same thing. And this isn't doing either Joan or Peter any good. Now, I'm going to need your help.
Well, you know I'll do anything I can.
All right. But what I'm going to ask you to do, Reverend, will go against your every instinct. I'm going to ask for your belief, Reverend.
In what?
In the fact that the double you saw, the werewolf, if you like, meant your daughter no harm. And above all, the fact that he must return to Peter's physical body.
Why do you need my help for that?
Because you shot him. And although I know he meant Joan no harm, I also know that Sangree must possess other instincts of the wolf. And those instincts will be crying for revenge.
Are you telling me that
I'm not telling you anything, Reverend. I'm asking you to serve as a stalking horse, to bring Peter within reach, and then, to believe that I can handle it. Now, Reverend, you're not going to have any second thoughts about being unarmed.
I gave you my word, Carter. Let's get on with it. You go fetch Ernest. I'll be all right in that short time. I'm sure the Lord is watching over me.
Let's hope he's watching over all of us. Ernie, come on out.
Did you find Sangree?
Not yet. How is Joan?
She's restless. She's unhappy, but I think under control.
Oh, good. Now, I think Peter knows the Reverend fired the shot that hurt him and is trailing him to get revenge. I've got the Reverend standing on a promontory over there. If the werewolf comes, I think I can gain control over him and get him back into Peter's body.
I hope so. For all our sakes, I hope so.
Peter! Oh, Peter, where are you?
Joan! Joan, come back here!
Let her go. We'll follow her. She'll lead us to him.
Carter! Did you hear it?
We're coming, Reverend. Hold on.
Oh, Peter, I love you.
There it goes into Peter's tent.
Let's hope it's in time.
What about the Reverend?
Joan will take care of him. Peter's the important one now.
He's alive.
Yes, but look.
Those marks on his face. Are they gunshot wounds?
They are. The Reverend aimed well. The shots went through his cheeks. Oh, he'll carry the scars for the rest of his life.
It was Joan who stopped him.
Joan's voice and his love for her. I'm not sure that I would have been able to head him off.
I've been hurt. My face, it burns.
You're going to be just fine. Peter, my love.
Joan, you're not frightened of me?
Of course not. At first I was. I didn't really understand. But now I know that I belong with you, and I'll be with you, always.
My face.
Don't touch it. Joan, you bathe the wounds with clean water, and they'll heal naturally.
Of course. And, Dr. Carter, thank you.
Ernest, I think we're superfluous around here now. Right, Joan?
That's right. Dr. Carter, my father has more need of you. Now, than either Peter or I.
And Joan's words proved to be true and not true.
As Duane and I came close to Timmy's tent, we heard a voice, the voice of a man praying fervently, praying to his God for forgiveness.
So, this tale of a man who unconsciously used a werewolf to further his love's ambitions ended happily. And I no longer flaunt my skepticism. However, I must in all truth say that it's not really the recommended way to go courting, even in today's permissive atmosphere. I'll be back shortly.
Children make a lot of noise, but to me it's a wonderful sound. They have a lot of energy, a lot of playing to do before they take on the serious world of adulthood. Every day they take on a bit more of this wonderful world. I guess we're lucky, because there are so many places in the world where the children are too weak, even for play. Bangladesh, Honduras, right here at home. They're weak from the lack of protein and essential vitamins, weak from the bad water and the parasites that rob them of important nutrients, a childhood of tears instead of laughter. And even if they do manage to become adults, their minds and limbs will be stunted by chronic malnutrition. You can help a child to grow up strong and independent, maybe even be one of tomorrow's leaders. Send your contribution to Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York 10017. That's Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York 10017.
Magicians are well aware that people love illusion. They want to be fooled. I wonder if any of the great magicians ever wondered why there's such a universal love for magical tricks that seem utterly beyond belief. It's my fancy that we love illusion because we live in hopes that someday something magical will happen to all of us. Our cast included Mason Adams, Norman Rose, Marion Seldes, Christopher Tabori, and Guy Sorrell. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Phyllis, a man has threatened to kill me.
What?
And I expect that he will. I wanted to spend this night with you.
Are you serious, Alex? A man is going to kill you?
It's no joke. Now, won't you stay home with me?
A man's going to kill you? Oh, don't be absurd. And don't scowl at me as if you'd like to kill me. Would you, my dear? Sometimes isn't that what you feel? Beautiful, flirtatious Phyllis. My wife with her bohemian friends. What if she were dead? End of jealousy? End of suffering? End of suspicions? Unfounded.
You can say that with a straight face? You and Jimmy Marquette who...
Believe what you want to, Alex. Send your imagined killer after me. You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Sometimes you can almost read my thoughts, my dear.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
the sound of bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News. Alabama Governor George Wallace is the apparent winner in the Mississippi Democratic precinct caucuses on Saturday. This is Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Wallace is leading fellow Southerner Jimmy Carter and three other Democrats in the Mississippi contest. About 40% of the county delegates have been chosen, and Wallace leads the field unofficially with more than 42% of the delegates. So far, about 26% of the delegates are uncommitted, and about 16% of them are backing former Georgia Governor Carter. Trailing are Sergeant Shriver with 13%, Texas Senator Lloyd Benson with about 2%, and former Oklahoma Senator Fred Harris with about 1% of the delegates. Wallace said he was very surprised to learn that he has done as well as he did in Mississippi. It certainly is encouraging, he said in a statement. Wallace was campaigning in Florida on Saturday. He told a crowd of supporters in Plant City that middle-class survival depends on solving problems of taxation, unemployment, and inflation. We've been talking about this since 1968, he said. Now other candidates are coming around to our way of thinking. The latest on President Ford in a minute.
Does competition in college always lead to cheating? Well, some students and faculty members think so. I'm Lawrence Johnson for What's New in Learning, heard every Sunday on the CBS Radio Network. And the problem of students cribbing on exams seems to be on the increase from coast to coast. And tomorrow I'll tell you about some plans that top colleges and universities have to make sure cheating is kept to a minimum. Listen as we discuss cribbing on the college campus on What's New in Learning, tomorrow over the CBS Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Don DeFore. As you know, many of you from personal experience, there have been spectacular gains in the fight against heart disease. I know. I was one of the lucky ones who benefited from heart research. My life was saved through the miracle of the triple bypass heart operation. But there are still problems to solve to save lives. And that's why we must all support heart research. Please give generously to the Heart Fund.
That daily swim in the White House pool and the exercising on a stationary bicycle apparently are helping President Ford keep in top physical shape. His doctor gave him a good report on Saturday. Robert Pierpoint has the story.
The president is in excellent health, and Mrs. Ford has apparently won her battle with cancer. This is the good news from Rear Admiral William Lukacs, the White House physician who directed President Ford's annual medical examination. In my judgment, Dr. Lukacs said, the president has maintained excellent health. He then gave several details, including blood pressure, 120 over 70, slow pulse rate of 60, cholesterol well within the normal range, and all x-rays showing normal. Lukacs will give more details on President Ford's health as blood tests and other laboratory results become available next week. As for Mrs. Ford, the doctor said a recent examination shows no recurrence of the cancer which required the removal of her right breast 18 months ago. And while she is still on chemotherapy for a few more months, Dr. Lukacs said, I think Mrs. Ford has apparently conquered her confrontation with cancer. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News at the White House.
As doctors continue their work slowdown in Southern California to protest rising malpractice insurance rates, health officials are warning that there may be a measles and flu epidemic in the area in the next few months. Dr. Reese Pileski, who is spokesman for the United Physicians of California, says the public should not be alarmed about doctors' willingness to handle a possible epidemic.
I think that the people in Los Angeles understand over the last weeks what the problems are and why the physicians are working so hard to get the liability crisis solved at the earliest time. Certainly, if an epidemic develops in the Southern California area, the primary care physicians in this area will respond to it immediately.
Dr. Pileski's group, whose members are mostly surgeons, had the support last week of general practitioners. They staged a two-day sympathy slowdown in the Los Angeles area. And now, this message.
Sound familiar? Each year, fire claims a devastating toll in human life and property. Last year, fire killed over 11,000 people and destroyed close to $4 billion in property.
Underwriters Laboratories field engineer Ray McNabb says you can help prevent this terrible killer from striking you or the ones you love by following these simple precautions.
Check the condition of electrical cords, appliances, and receptacles. Make certain that electrical cords are not frayed or placed beneath carpeting. Always keep matches and lighters away from children. And store paints and other flammable liquids in sealed containers.
And know exactly where your fire extinguisher is located.
That's right. Keep a fire extinguisher in the kitchen, the garage, and where your heaters are located. And be sure it is accessible should the fire start in that area.
This is public safety information from Underwriters Laboratories and this station.
The chairman of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation says 359 banks are on its problem bank list. Chairman Frank Willey did not name any of the banks, but broke them down into categories. There are 29 with severe problems, 92 with serious problems, and 238 with other unnamed problems. We'll disclose the figures in a report to Senator William Proxmeyer, who heads the Senate Banking Committee. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.